Pushkin.
Did you know some travel credit cards offer 10 times points on your spending? Don't miss out on big rewards for your next trip. NerdWallet lets you compare smart travel credit cards side by side, curated by an expert team of finance nerds. What could future you do with better travel rewards? A free flight? A room upgrade? Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. Reminder, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. NerdWallet, finance smarter.
The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. The PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with AI coaching tools and 5G connected cameras. AAA is getting more drivers back on the road fast with location telematics. And the Las Vegas Grand Prix is powering race day operations with 5G connectivity, giving fans an experience at the speed they deserve. This is accelerating innovation with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
It all started with two federal agents who heard a rumor.
She mentions, well, there is this alleged murder to have taken place.
There was just one problem. They had no clue who the victim was.
We have to do our job, and we have to find out, who did they kill?
It had been 15 years since this alleged murder. Was it still possible to unearth the truth?
I used to watch the Unsolved Mystery shows, and I often thought about calling because I was like, this is not right. How can a person get killed and no one knows anything?
I'm Jake Halpern, and this is Deep Cover, The Nameless Man. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. And if you want to hear the entire season right now, ad-free, subscribe to Pushkin Plus on our Apple Podcast show page or on pushkin.fm/plus.
Today we have part two of our run of interviews with The National in celebration of their new album, First Two Pages of Frankenstein. Last week, Broken Record producer Leah Rose talked to guitarist and composer Aaron Dessner about The National's interpersonal dynamics. Today, Leah picks up that conversation with the band's lead singer, Matt Berninger. Matt, whose fear and anxieties are often on full display in his songwriting, talks about overcoming a debilitating bout of depression in the period before he started writing songs for the new album. He also explains how the combination of weed and iced tea helped him spark his creativity and why he hopes his songwriting impresses Phoebe Bridgers and Taylor Swift. This is Broken Record, liner notes for the digital age. I'm Justin Richmond. Here's Leah Rose with Matt Berninger.
I saw a video that you recorded, I guess it was like 2 years ago, for Amoeba Records.
Mm-hmm.
And you were picking through your favorite records.
Uh-huh.
And I started to sort of like listen to some of the to the records that you were showing, and it really helped me understand you as an artist and as a singer. And so I wanted to hear you just talk about some of these artists and see how specifically maybe their style helped you develop your own style.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, I don't remember what I picked. So
yeah, I figure then maybe the list has changed at this point.
Yeah, but maybe I'll disown this whole list, but let's see. Yeah.
I know, right? But the first artist I wanted to ask you about was Tom Waits.
Uh-huh.
When did you start listening to Tom Waits?
I think freshman year of college, so that was 1990, I went to couple of years at Miami University of Cincinnati. So I was like, it was my first year of college. So this is the first time I lived alone. And that's when I remember hearing, I think it was a compilation I heard him on first. And I think it was the song Big Black Mariah. And I don't remember what compilation it was on. And I fell in love with that song. And I went out and tried and wanted to check out some records. But I remember all I could find was this one record, his early years record, and like a guy called Tom Waits, and says early years, and then there's this skinny white guy on the cover. I was like, this isn't the person from who's singing Big Black Mariah on the thing I had heard. This has got to be somebody else. But I bought it anyway, and it was, so I think I first got into his early years and then connected all the dots to like Bone Machine, and that was right before Bone Machine came out. I feel like that's when, I can't remember exactly what all, but it was the fun journey, like learning, hearing like, you know, semi, you know, contemporary or whatever, 90s Tom Waits, and then going back and then starting with his really early, like those real acoustic demos and piano demos and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that was a big long time all through college, it feels like. And then I would come back to him, and in different records I would go into deep dives in at different times, and Rain Dogs.
Yeah, that was the one that you picked out for this Amoeba.
Okay, yeah. I mean, I also remember another case. This is how stupid I was with music, and I didn't really do very deep dives. I thought that was him on the cover forever.
Right.
And I'd seen pictures of him and seen, but I, for some reason my brain made them the same face, same person. But I have a tattoo that says Martha from his song Martha, and which I remember listening to and crying to after breaking up with my first college girlfriend, or being broken up with. It was mutual, I don't remember, but but I was driving back to Cincinnati from Oxford, Ohio, and realizing that was finally over. And then I transferred to a new school. Anyway, yeah, so Tom Waits was like right there in some of the most intense, you know, early relationships. But then always, like, you know, my Corinne and I like just went through big deep Tom Waits dives you know, over different times. And yeah, just this combination of goofiness and heartbreak and darkness, you know, and spookiness. There's just something all about, you know. And Nick Cave's another one who's like in that sort of world of like the alchemy of sincerity and silliness, you know, that's so magical sometimes.
Do you hear them in your own performance when you sing? Like,
well, I'm sure. I mean, I don't. I'm sure other people do more than I do. You know, I can't. I don't know what I look like in the mirror. You know, everybody else. I mean, that's one of those things. But the other thing about Tom Waits is I was also really taken with and kind of inspired by his relationship with his wife Kathleen Brennan and how they write together. And they're, you know, one of my favorite songs of his of all time is called Johnsburg, Illinois, and it's just a little portrait of a song about where she's from, you know, and just about meeting her. And it's like the most delicate little sweet little love song. And yeah, so I think that was something I always found so romantic and so cool, that here's this guy who can write all these songs about heartbreak and all this stuff, but then also write them with the one he loves. You know, I think it's really cool.
Yeah, that's beautiful. If you don't know a band, you don't know a singer, you don't know a song, how much patience do you have to sort of discover something new?
I'd like to think I have some like some patience, but that is a good question, because I do struggle a lot, I think, with like even like the playlist set that I'm on. I have a harder time. I mean, I don't know, I've always a bit of a snob, and that's the thing about music, it's like sports, so it's like mm-hmm. you hate most stuff, you know, you want to talk about how much you hate, like with your friends, you're like, oh, I hate, you know, and you define yourself by everything you hate, you know.
Right.
Or you don't get, and I was definitely that contrarian, you know. The Smiths were a band I loved so much just because none of my other friends had ever heard of them, and the boy with the thorn in his side was definitely me, you know. And so still have a little bit of that where I'm like, what? I don't get it, you know. But I realize I'm totally wrong most of the time, and then I'll get used to it, and I'll learn things about it. So it's hard to say. I might have been more of a snob when I was, you know, in college than I am now. And now I actually really have a fun time studying like stuff that I don't listen to at all, but I'm like I did a recent sort of thing of just like, what's, you know, all these different artists, their number one song, and trying to figure out what the tempo of their number one song was, you know. And the first three artists I looked at, it was like 118, right?
So yeah, I've heard like 120 is kind of
is that not,
for a pop record, that might be kind of like the
I'm like
common BPM.
I'm looking it up, and then I'm like, well, what is it? What are people like, you know, what is this? The pop world, like what are these? Because everybody talks about the formula, but then I did. But then it was a futile exercise, because then I listened to a bunch of other, and suddenly I found a bunch that were, you know, like around 150, and then I found a bunch are like great songs that are around 90, you know, and then. But then it's also like, it's all just in the groove and how you subdivide it. And it's like something that's like 90 is also 180, you know, and depend on how you deliver it. And then so I kind of, it didn't lead me anywhere, but it was kind of fun to dig into it. There's also, I read about all this stuff and how it's slowing down. Pop music is the average BPM used to be like in the 140s, and now it's down to, somebody's saying it's like down to like 108 is an average.
It's funny. I mean, I could definitely see that with hip hop, because hip hop has like gotten way like more like slow and syrupy.
But
140 is super fast.
Yeah. But the truth is, it doesn't matter at all, because you could take any BPM and subdivide it in a way and put a swing to it, and how you would like, and all of a sudden its momentum goes from sluggish to like, it's like mixing paint, you know, it's like,
right.
Which is fun to learn, you know, it's like, there's not a formula. There's not like a formula for a good painting, you know, it's just not.
Yeah.
So,
and also it seems like if you started with thinking about a formula, you're not going to end up in a good place.
No, but it's
because you're thinking more about like what the audience is going to like, right, rather than what you're going to put forth.
Right. I love to do, like, lately just going in with a friend and just been like, we'll just like pick any song, and just kind of like, you know, we picked By Your Side by Sade not long ago. Oh, and like, and just like, what is it?
What a good song.
Like, why is it so much better than all other songs at that same tempo with the same chords?
I think it's her. It's her voice. Yeah. It's her delivery.
It's a million things. Yeah.
It's
impossible to totally, obviously it's her, you know, but it's like,
yeah,
but why is that song of hers stand out so much from
it's
even her catalog? You know, it's like, well, there's so many people that have one song that just like is 10 times bigger than the rest of their entire catalog, or, you know,
right.
What is it? What is it about that one, that thing? It is fun. It's just fun to like kind of try to see if you can decipher magic, you know, if you can figure it out, but you can't, you can't. I mean, but it is how everything you're listening to, every song was them trying something, probably listening to a bunch of other things and trying to put together their combination. And occasionally the alchemy turns, it's black magic. It totally is. You still know, you know?
Yeah. I was thinking about it from the perspective of a listener. Like, if I sit down and listen to your new album, you sort of take for granted that like somebody actually created this from silence.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes you just assume like things always existed. Like,
uh-huh,
there was a time when Hey Jude didn't exist.
Right.
Like, somebody wrote that and made that music.
My daughter and I were like driving around. We just drive around for hours just listening to songs. And she's in that phase where she's just like, really, like, songs are magic to her now. I think it's like, it's blooming, and she's 14. And so we were listening to the Wise Blood album a lot. We were listening to, she's learning that on guitar, but then we were like, started listening to some Beatles and stuff, and just like, and Hey Jude is just like, oh my God, it starts out one way. And then at the end, he's just like, he's just a nut job at the end, just like riffing and just like, doo, 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 doo. It's almost ridiculous at the end. And yeah, but the idea that like it started from nothing and then it's there, you know?
Yeah, and like there was a time when that song did not exist.
Yeah, it's fun. It's funny.
It's crazy.
Totally.
So I'm just curious with The National, like with making this new album, like, it sounds like before you started recording it, you know, maybe you were going through some sort of like writer's block. That's the story that I'm hearing.
Yeah.
And that was somehow unlocked by you reading Frankenstein. Is that a true story?
It is true. I was in a really long writer's block. Like I'd never been. I couldn't write. It was caused by whatever, like self-loathing and depression and the pain, all that stuff. I went into a phase where I just couldn't. I didn't want to write. I was sick of writing about myself, all that stuff. And I won't say there was any one thing that unlocked it. It was mostly just kind of reconnecting with the band and just kind of pushing through it in time. And then it started slowly coming back. But when it started coming back, one song that I was just like, the music came, it was new music that had just been sent. And I was kind of like, okay, like I just wanted to fresh words in my head. So sometimes I'll just go and grab literally anything, a magazine and you know, anything, and just like look at words, just skim it, and just like until a word or something, just like whatever. It's trying to just like shake the trees and see if an animal falls out, right? And so, yeah, Frankenstein was the book I just randomly picked, and the words like tranquilize and ocean and this whole stuff about like the poles. It all starts out in the Arctic. And so I started kind of just writing some imagery about that, but it was all, I think it was imagery that I was kind of using that imagery to write about my brain and write about my feeling lost and frozen and disconnected. And so the song is "Your Mind Is Not Your Friend," but that phrase was just something that my wife Corinne had been echoing to me over the past year when I was in this phase. And I just like thought like, you know, I was like, I don't know if I can ever do it. I don't know if I can write anymore. I don't know if I can go on stage anymore. I don't know if I can tour anymore. I don't know if I can do any of it anymore. I was feeling paralyzed by not just the writer's block, but all of it, you know, just like everything was like, there was a phase I didn't want to write. I didn't want to listen to anything. You know, I couldn't listen to anything. But when I started to break through a little bit, and those guys started sending me a bunch of news, like, oh, he's working again. The rest of the band started like, hurry up, like send him new stuff. He's plugged in again. And the music for Your Mind Is Not Your Friend was one of those kind of new ones that came and I wrote it really fast. Yeah. And it was triggered, but I can't remember which song of the record. I know, Once Upon a Poolside was one of them that was like, okay, finally a song came. And I think it was when I just started writing directly about the things I was, you know, my fears and everything.
Yeah. I'm curious what your wife says when you're in that place, when she's trying to encourage you and you tell her like, I can't go back on stage. I can't write. This might be the end of it.
She was always like, that's totally fine. That is totally fine. You know? And I was like, thank God, you know? And I was like, it's not totally fine. You don't understand how not fine that is. It won't be good for me. It won't be good for anybody. It's bad. If that does. And she's like, nobody wants, and the band was like that too. Everybody was like, I wasn't getting any pressure from anybody except for myself.
So you didn't feel like let off the hook, like, okay, cool. Now I can just like,
no, I was let off the hook. I've always been let off the, like nobody in the band, or I think none of our partners or will ever, nobody's got anybody on a hook. We all do this because we want to do it. And yeah, when I couldn't do it, it wasn't that I wanted to be able to do it. I wanted to want to do it. I really wanted to want to do it, but I couldn't, and I couldn't. The idea of like getting on stage made me, you know, almost, you know, sick. You know, like just so much anxiety. The idea of walking in, even go to the airport. You know, there's a phase I just like, it wasn't like flying. I was just like did not want to go. I did not want to go out into the world or be. You know, I wanted to stay unplugged, but I couldn't. You know, so. And then I was terrified that shit, it's been unplugged for so long, and the machine has stopped for so long. I don't know if it's ever going to start again. And then it slowly started.
How did you feel when it started? Were you exhilarated? Did it feel like those feelings were kind of melting away?
It was slow. It was a slow. It wasn't. There were a couple times. I think Once Upon a Poolside, the guys in the band were like, "Nice one," you know, like that one. You know, like nobody wanted to make too much of a deal about it when I started to write again. And it didn't, it wasn't like all of a sudden one day I woke up and I was like, you know, on fire. It was very much, you know, starting the fire back from rubbing sticks together. But eventually it warmed up, and, you know, Yeah, and then I was writing a lot. And then when we were on tour, I was Eucalyptus was written really fast, and New Order T-shirt was written really fast, and the Alcott was written really fast, and half the songs were written quickly, and then the other half, you know, started and then froze and then, you know, morphed into something later. Yeah.
Okay, so you didn't go back into the sunken place at a certain point. Were you out, like, once the song started to come?
No, but I got above it enough to sort of like to be able to breathe, so that like so that when I sink back down, know that I, you know, so I'm not in the lowest part of it, you know, but I'm definitely not. I'm definitely aware that it's right there. You know, the water's always right about here. And sometimes you'll find yourself, and you're like, and I just know, I know where I am. So I'm just more aware of the when it gets too deep to stand, you know, and just to back away a little bit, you know, whatever that is. It's just your brain. It's just your
totally.
You know,
does having the songs and having actual tangible creative output, does that sort of put any gas in your tank?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the thing that when I feel like, oh, I'm onto something. This could be great. This could be a beautiful song. And you always like those first feelings where you just get a even just a melody, or I mean, those guys send me lots and lots of stuff. So I'm listening to a lot of music. They're like, if I could only do something, this could be incredible. But a lot of times I'm like, I just can't. Or every time I do something, it's what's beautiful about it goes away. I can ruin it. You know, it's like it's easy to ruin a beautiful white canvas, you know, or and their canvases aren't clean. They come already with so much information. But sometimes I just cannot dance with one of their sketches or one of the bits of music. And this was like, I could hear I could hear that the music that I was trying to write to was good. It wasn't that. It was me. I was not able to sort of find my way into it. And that was what was the worst part about it. But yeah, when a couple of little bits and some songs and a little phrase or melody like started, like, okay, well, that's a good enough. That's a good lily pad. That's one little Lego that I'm gonna put over here because I think I'm gonna use that little Lego. You know, the rest is just a mess, and I don't want to even look at that pile. But at least that one little Lego, you know. And then you find another Lego, you know. And so the little tiny bits, a little lyric or a little melody or in a little spot in a song somewhere, will be like, ah, if I can build a song out from around that one little spark, then it might end up being the best song ever written. That's right. The thing about songs. They're like these three and a half minute things that you could start and you have this sense of like, this might be one, like this could be a beautiful song. This could be Imagine. This could be, you know, Sabotage. This could be, you know, Hey Ya, whatever, you know, you know what I'm saying? Like when you start on something, like it could be one of the greatest songs ever written, and it could be Hey Jude. And it almost never is, you know, but it could be. And that feeling is when a kid first learns the G chord for the first time and they're like, holy shit, I can be Nirvana. You know, once you get that first thread. So that's first for me, like the songs, like just a little bit where like, that might end up being incredible if I can.
So the hope.
Yeah.
Just the hope part of it.
The belief that like this could be a beautiful thing that makes you and lots of people feel great. And it could be on the radio, and, you know, it could be, it's like just stuff that those simple things, you're like, those are such enough serotonin or endorphins get sent off into your bloodstream that just one of the little things a day can keep your head above water and then
keep you going.
But that's why, you know, that's why like when months and weeks would go by and I didn't have one of those little things, I was getting none of them, you know, nothing.
We're going to take a quick break and then we'll be back with more from Leah Rose and Matt Berninger. As listeners to this show, you probably consider yourself pretty smart. But how smart is your wallet? When you're looking to upgrade your wallet, it's time to turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds has the financial smarts to help you find the right financial products for you. Before NerdWallet, you might have paid for vacations with whatever was in your wallet. But you could have been missing out on miles you didn't even know you were leaving on the table. Now you can get a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? A hotel upgrade? Lounge access? Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet. Finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply.
It all started with two federal agents who heard a rumor.
She mentions, well, there is this alleged murder to have taken place.
There was just one problem. They had no clue who the victim was.
We have to do our job, and we have to find out, who did they kill?
It had been 15 years since this alleged murder. Was it still possible to unearth the truth?
I used to watch the Unsolved Mystery shows, and I often thought about calling because I was like, this is not right. How can a person get killed and no one knows anything?
I'm Jake Halpern, and this is Deep Cover, The Nameless Man. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. And if you want to hear the entire season right now, ad-free, subscribe to Pushkin Plus on our Apple Podcast show page or on pushkin.fm/plus.
We're back with Matt Berninger and Leah Rose.
Do you have any, like, wellness practices or anything that you do that is supposed to be good for you, you know, whether it's like exercise or meditation or walks or...
Yeah, I used to ride on my bike and walks, biking and walking, just, you know, those things. Yeah, I think it's very well known that just moving your body is like, just getting your body moving. Cause when your body is moving, it's not you're trying to, like, you know, lose weight or get right. Cardio, just move your body simply that those gears are at least doing that thing, you know?
Right.
And so when those gears are doing that thing, your legs are moving and you're walking and you're breathing in and out, the part of your brain that gets anxiety and gets stress can sometimes just slow down and let that thing. And then suddenly the rest of the gears start.
Yeah.
It greases the wheels, you know, it's like,
totally.
And when you don't do those things, I think the worry part, the anxiety, the other wheels in your brain that you need are important for survival and all that kind of stuff, but they just start spinning and nothing, and everything else freezes. And then you just, like, you're exhausted, but you can't sleep because your anxiety wheels are going. So yeah, I do those things, but I mean, honestly, like when I was in that dark phase, I didn't want to, I mean, I'd ride my bike two blocks and I'd turn around and come home. I was like,
yeah,
couldn't ride my bike. You know, I couldn't watch TV, couldn't listen to any music. So it was a sunken place for sure.
Sunken place. Has listening to music with your daughter influenced your writing at all, or the way that you're approaching music? Because it's almost like you get to hear music for the first time, mm-hmm. you know, through her ears.
Only that if you try to cater to anybody, you're going to fail. Like her bullshit detector for, like, just sounds like they're trying so hard to make me think they're cool. Or... Like lines that are like, seem like great, all caps, you know, great lyrics. She's like, it's a little too much, you know? It's like, oh gosh, you know, like kids are way more sophisticated than you think. And,
yeah.
And, you can't, like, well, I mean, it's hard to say. It's like, I mean, I don't want to, like, there's guilty pleasures, but still her favorite stuff is, more complex, or just like the stuff that's like blurry and weird, and it's like why kids love certain scary children's books that are just like you can't quite figure them out. Like why do those resonate so much? It's always the stuff that's a little creepy, a little spooky, not setting it up, you know, with an obvious, you know, satisfying thing. Like mm-hmm. like something that's a little off and a little hard to figure out, like, what does that mean? That's the stuff that sticks with her. And so
it's intriguing.
Yeah, it's really, that's, so it's really inspiring. I was like, oh yeah, I can't, like, you can never phone it in and try to like market to, you know, to a demographic or anything. You just have to, you really have to be honest with yourself. Are you interesting? Are you being interesting to yourself? Cause even 12-year-olds can tell when you're pandering.
Do you play her music you're working on?
Yeah. Yeah, I do.
What does she tend to tell you?
She's always excited. She's always, she does really like it. And funny, it's like, I'll play this stuff because occasionally she'll like not like something. And she's definitely not being nice, you know, because she sees, well, Corinne and I talk about it all the time. So she sees how not precious I am. And she sees how both of us, you know, tear apart TV shows and tear apart movies and like, you know, like we're cruel to stuff. Just because that's what you do. It's
yeah. Sounds like my house.
Yeah, I mean it's like because when something's great, like it has to be celebrated, and like in the mystery of why something is great, you have to dig into it.
It really is easier to talk shit about something than describe how incredible something is.
Yeah, I mean, mostly when I'm writing, I'm just trying to avoid being terrible. I mean, like you try to write something and it's terrible. It's like you try to sing a melody. It's like, it's terrible. So it's like, wait, maybe something there. And then you find, and so it's always, for me, it's always, I step into the ugly, you know, I just step out and it's always ugly, or it's very rarely a lyric or even a melody ever quite. It takes a lot of stepping in this way, that way, this way, a little bit of an adjustment and listening over and over and throwing it away. Like when I write, you know, I'll put in a sketch from those guys, and it's usually pretty simple. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's not even, it's just one part, you know, it's like, you know, three or four chords like repeated. And I'll just start trying to sing to it. And I'll just track after track, layer after layer. I just like, I'll have 15 things that I'm just like, just free associating and singing gobbledygook over. And then I'll go back and listen. And it's like, most of it's all terrible. And it's just like, oh, that one little spot is like kind of...
Like the melody is terrible, or the words are terrible, the lyrics are terrible?
It's usually melody. You know, I'm always like looking for melody, not worrying about words. And then later I will try to put words to it. And I kind of write separately. I'll write little bits and pieces, and then I'll see if it fits in a song. And then I'll listen to like what it sounds like I'm saying, and like go in that mode and just try to like write around what it kind of sounds like I'm saying and craft that. It's like I can go about it like all different ways, but almost never am I like, oh, like step right in, like, oh, that's feeling good, and like a song comes out. It's usually like it's just always trying to avoid stuff that sounds cliche, or you're trying too hard, or you're sound too bored, or you sound too energetic, or you, like, it's just a million a million little dials, you know.
But that seems good though, because at least it's the opposite of being paralyzed. Yeah. Like that's very active.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And just trying and trying and trying and kind of like reiterating.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any sort of rituals or any things that you put yourself through to get into a space where it's easier to write? We had Rivers Cuomo on the show, and he talked about how he tried sort of like a deprivation technique where he would lock himself in a bathroom for like 2 days and like not eat just to try and like bring about creativity that way. And that's obviously extreme.
Mm-hmm.
But is there anything that you do, like, even if it's like drink a little something, smoke something, and then you're in the space?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't try to force it. I mean, when I was in that long phase where nothing has happened, I realized that, like, oh God, if you can't just sit around, it's weird. It's like I couldn't turn it on, and I kept trying. And I guess if I hadn't keep trying to turn it on, it may have never come on. And so I did have to force it, I guess. Eventually, I had to go to the studio. I had to go in the booth, and the microphone was on. I had to try put something on record, you know. And that's. It wasn't until then until it really started happening. So I did, like, just getting in there and doing it is really the only thing sometimes when it's not happening at all that you can do. I don't know, just get in front of a microphone. But I, again, I will say I kind of just have to get into a comfortable place with it. And I will, most of the time I'm writing like on a couch or in bed with headphones on and like just listen to stuff and just trying to zone out. Yeah. And sometimes I'll smoke some weed. Sometimes I'll, you know, I don't. Yeah. I'll drink a little bit of wine sometimes like that. But I kind of, I like it in the mode where, you know, iced tea and weed works really great, you know, and kind of in the middle of the day, in the middle of the day, in those weird moments, those kind of
like light up or downer.
Yeah. Just a light. I don't write well when I'm like loaded. I mean, sometimes.
Have you ever recorded or written or recorded something when you're just like loaded and you probably think it sounds really, really good, or maybe it's really deep. Like, what is that experience like?
Oh my God, I don't know. That's a good question. I'm trying to, it's hard to, I mean, yeah, I used to, my favorite thing in the world to do was get a six pack and a pack of cigarettes and listen to records. And I have a notebook and just like, just filling notebooks and just writing and listening and just, and it was just like, it was great. Just what can I say? It was so much fun. But I don't do it like that anymore. Just because it's like I feel like shit if I drink or smoke much stuff, you know. And so yeah, it's a healthier thing. And I do. It's good to ride a bike. And I'll smoke some weed and ride my bike and get in the mode. And if I get in the mode, I'll be pulling over every 2 minutes to like write to text myself a little thing. A little lyric or a little line. So that's kind of how it works. I like to get into kind of meditative rhythmic zone. I won't sit there and try to like craft architect a song. I'll get a little bit I like, and then I'll sing it over and over and over again. And, you know, on a loop and just kind of practicing the rhythm of a, you know, practicing a swing. You just kind of keep doing it until you get the kind of rhythm right and the tone of it right. And I'll do that. And that's probably because you're stoned and you're just kind of in that mode. And you're just like, you can marvel at the same Lego like for a while.
Totally.
But it's good. But you manage to kind of, you know, get that stone just right. So when you're going to put it into another brick in the wall, whatever, it's like, you got to get that brick just right. And other times then you're like, okay, now I've filled this sketch is only 3 minutes long, but I've got 17 different melody options, right? It's like there's...
Wow. Are they all original melodies? Like, how do you know they don't come from...
I don't know.
You would hope they don't, but it seems like it was just sort of a natural thing to happen.
I don't know. You just like, it's a weird thing. There'd be like, you can start almost anywhere. It's like, I mean, I used to think like, okay, here's a guitar, here's some guitar chords and a beat and a rhythm. It's like, okay, well, there's only so many things I can do. I learned long ago, I was like, oh shit, you can... You may feel like you're cornered in with something. It's like you can start anywhere on it. You can like, it's almost infinite. How many? I mean, you can start on a note that rubs against whatever notes are there and play with that that way. It's like you can put any kind of color onto any kind of canvas and try. You know, sometimes it's just it just doesn't feel right. You know, it just doesn't feel the personality of it. Like I always talk about the personality of songs. It's just like,
yeah,
the personality doesn't feel like me, you know, I didn't feel like I wasn't in that zone. I can't quite get, even though it's, I like that personality, but it's just like, that's not what I need now. That's not the character. I need to talk to right now. You know, that's what the songs are like. They're like a partner that you have to sort of like dance with, and some, you know, some people you like are in rhythm with, and some people, like, you know, some sketches that Aaron sent me ended up, you know, on other people's records and are huge hits. You know, it's like,
oh, like what's an example of that?
I don't know. there's a bunch of them. I think Cardigan and Willow and some other ones. I had been taking a whack at some ideas early, at one point. Those were in a batch that I was like, I couldn't do anything to. And I still, I've listened to those. I've studied those songs. It's like, oh, look what she did with those songs.
Right. I was going to say, yeah, like that must be interesting.
Yeah. Because I've got things like that are just really different melody and rhythm, like places that like totally different songs. And it's like, that's one of those things that's really, really, really kind of fun about songs. And what we were talking about before is like, for example, when I go in and say like, okay, here's, you know, By Your Side by Sade. I mean, you could learn it first you learn it and then you get, okay, that's that song. But like to kind of like try do a song that's kind of in the, it's like really, really hard to match a zone of a thing, you know, it's kind of, I mean, you can kind of match it, but it's like.
Do you mean if you were to try and cover it or make something in a similar vein?
You can cover, but like even covering songs does not mean that song's going to have any of that magic that that one did. It's weird. So I'm saying it's like, I'm never nervous about somebody saying, oh, you stole that from, I'm like maybe.
It's derivative or something.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. But like that, everything that you hear is taken and recrafted. And it's not even like they try hard. It's like, it's kind of impossible to like, you change one little thing, everything starts to change, you know?
Yeah.
So I was listening to the Miley Cyrus Flowers, and she even talks about it's her biggest song, I think Flowers now. And it's like, she was sort of ripping off the Bruno Mars song or something.
Uptown Funk?
No, Be Your Man. I Want to Be Your Man or something like that. His biggest song. His like a billion and a half, you know, listens. And I'm like, oh yeah, there's that little section right there. I mean, the lyrics are, I mean, flowers, rhyming flowers with hours and hand with sand are all there. You know, she could definitely just like took all that and and she talks about it. That's the best way to approach it, because like it's the other ones, they're both giant massive songs, and you're like, oh yeah, there's that little part where like, oh yeah, you can hear that note and on that thing, there's that little fragment that definitely was taken from that. But I don't like that's how everything's made, you know, kind of like I think I do that probably more than I realize, but it's usually I often sing other people's lyrics to music because it's impossible often with songs, tempo and time signature or chords or whatever. One lyrics it forces you to change everything around, you know, just,
right.
You change melody and everything changes. And then you find your own, you know, and then those words that you started with somebody else just disappear, and your own things just sort of grow in the cracks of that you made around it. I don't know. The process is usually incredibly fun, really. And, that's why, like, in that phase where I was heartbroken over the loss of my love for it. That was such a bummer, for even music not to give me that thrill or that serotonin or that endorphin or that little stuff.
We'll be back after another quick break with more from Leah Rose and Matt Berninger. As listeners to this show, you probably consider yourself pretty smart. But how smart is your wallet? When you're looking to upgrade your wallet, it's time to turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds has the financial smarts to help you find the right financial products for you. Before NerdWallet, you might have paid for vacations with whatever was in your wallet. But you could have been missing out on miles you didn't even know you were leaving on the table. Now you can get a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? A hotel upgrade? Lounge access? Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet. Finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply.
It all started with two federal agents who heard a rumor.
She mentions, well, there is this alleged murder to have taken place.
There was just one problem. They had no clue who the victim was.
We have to do our job, and we have to find out, who did they kill?
It had been 15 years since this alleged murder. Was it still possible to unearth the truth?
I used to watch the Unsolved Mystery shows, and I often thought about calling, because I was like, this is not right. How can a person get killed and no one knows anything?
I'm Jake Halpern, and this is Deep Cover, The Nameless Man. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. And if you want to hear the entire season right now, ad-free, subscribe to Pushkin Plus on our Apple Podcast show page or on pushkin.fm/plus.
We're back with the rest of Leah Rose's conversation with the Nationals' Matt Berninger.
Is it true that there's sort of like an unwritten rule in the band that people don't directly ask you about the meaning behind your lyrics?
I didn't know. They don't. They almost never do. I don't think they ever do.
Does anyone ask you in your, like...
Fans do, and journalists do, and there's no rule. But no, the guys usually don't. Yeah, they don't. I'd have to think about when any of those guys ever asked me.
Do you care what they think about your lyrics?
Yeah. Totally, of course. Yeah, I'm always trying to impress them.
Yeah, when you're writing, is there somebody in your mind who you're trying to impress or you're writing for?
Yeah, those guys in Corinne, you know, and my daughter and the peers, you know. Yeah, I wanna impress all the Walkmen. I wanna impress Phoebe Bridgers. I want Taylor Swift to be as impressed by me as I am by her, you know. And so, yeah, I wanna be loved. I wanna be adored, and I wanna be. But that's the what's such a funny thing. It's like if you try to write with that purpose, you're going to sound desperate, you know? So to be truly adored and to be for other, your favorite artist to actually really like what you're doing, you have to do weird shit that is little, maybe uncomfortable and scary and maybe isn't going to work. You know, that's what's going to impress the Walkman. That's what's going to impress, my wife. And that's what the band wants. Like, the band doesn't want, our band doesn't necessarily want a hit if it's not real, if it doesn't feel like kind of real to us.
I was wondering with Corinne, like when she hears things that you've written, if you're writing about an old love or loving someone, missing somebody, is she ever like, who are you talking about?
No. When we first started dating, I was in the middle of writing all these songs, you know. A bunch of songs, you know, that she kind of like right away was kind of like so into all of it, like the writing of songs. So it's always been that way. And I've also been mostly writing about her, you know, it's like, or the band or, yeah, but then there's sometimes songs are not autobiographical, obviously, but they're sort of exercises in looking into a window or looking over the edge of something. And like Eucalyptus or whatever is obviously a song about splitting up things. And I think it's a kind of a funny song about like, you know, like all the things, like how do you split up your water subscription, you know? But so you're writing about breaking up as a way of sort of like, of confronting your fears, you know. It's like mm-hmm. Once Upon a Poolside, and like a lot of those record is really like the fear of maybe the band being over, and mm-hmm. It's very romantic. Generally, there'll be bits and pieces of the songs that like, and it's usually much later, like after the record's out and after finally it's all finished, where like,
yeah,
I listen to it again, and you know what, you know, like it'll be way later. But in the middle of the creative process, if it's good. If it's like, oh, that's great. Like, that's all we ever talk about. Sometimes much later, once the art is finished, we'll be like, maybe we should talk about that a little bit. You know, let's.
Yeah. I was wondering, is there ever an instance where you write a lyric and it's the beginning of something that might almost be subconscious, but then it ultimately comes true later?
I mean, what you made me think of is maybe not what you're asking, but I do worry, and I did feel that maybe all of this writing of all these, making these big, you know, these beautiful things out of uncomfortable feelings that I've been doing for 20 years, and, you know, we're on, this is our ninth record or whatever, and plus all the other, like, writing hundreds of songs about some of this stuff, I was like, am I manifesting this character? Am I becoming, am I, did I create this? This mm-hmm. sad sack, you know, because I write about it so much.
do you think you did? Like, where did you land with that question?
It's in between. It's like, yes, but I also write all these songs because I am that way and have that way. Yeah. And that's how I survive. That's how I feel better about life, is because I make a little something kind of semi enjoyable and kind of fun and beautiful and moving out of this ugly feeling, you know. That's what all great love songs are, you know. It's like sad, ugly, uncomfortable feelings with to melody, you know. and that's all the best love songs are kind of crushing, and mm-hmm. so I think I'm a much healthier person having written all this stuff than have not, you know. I do know that, like, other people, like, listening to, like, we talked about, like, the artists that we've been talking about, including, like, for example, go back to Tom Waits. I know that Tom Waits made me mentally healthier, you know, made me a happier person, made me like myself more. And so did Nick Cave. So all my favorite artists, you know, make me like myself a little bit more, because they're great about writing about what they hate about themselves. And I can identify with that. And I was like, if that person hates themselves, like, can say that terrible thing about themselves and make it so beautiful, then I'm like, oh, maybe I can make something out of all the things I hate about myself. So yeah. But then at a certain time, you know, the point of, like, all these years, especially getting on stage and performing it and doing it, you know, and then having, like, a fan base, which is, like, incredible. Like, I have fans of songs I wrote, you know. It's like, it's sometimes you take for granted how, like, most people don't have fans of songs that they wrote, you know. It's like an incredible thing. Strangers that you've never met like these songs that you wrote, these things you wrote about your own feelings, you know. Like, that's so lucky, you know. And then when people, like, say how much they get out of it, and you see people having these moments, and you see, and people write to you and tell you, like, this, you know, and I get a lot of letters that people say, like, this stuff actually helped me through a really rough time. And I'm like, it helped me through a rough time. And then I think of all the other artists that helped me, that their records helped me. And I'm like, oh God, yeah, this is all really good. Like, this is all a really good thing to do.
Yeah, you're, like, in service to other people.
A little bit, but mostly myself, you know. Mostly, like, I'm doing it for my own mental health mostly, but it is working for other people too. It's helping other people too, for sure, and that's really good. But then he's like the night after night after night after night after night after night, and touring and being all that, and then you get weird. Yeah. You just get weird.
How does it get weird? I heard you talk about that being on tour can get weird, and I'm extremely curious about what you mean about that.
Honestly, I think it's just mostly exhaustion. But then I think it's the turning on and then turning off. Yeah. It's like, for me to get into show mode, to turn on, to do that for, like, a 2-hour, you know, give or take, performance, like, it doesn't come naturally. It's not like I'm like, I can't wait to get out there. It's like, it's bracing. It's on my mind all day. It's on my mind. It's like every day is sort of like you're doing, like, a mini wedding. You got to get ready, like, to, you know, you're just trying to, like, you know, get ready for it. And you have to entertain, and you have to, you don't know, you might wake up in a great mood, but then, like, something, like, you might by 7:30, you know, half an hour before you're supposed to go on stage, something, you just might just be in the most miserable place for whatever reason.
And you're the front man. So yeah. It's like all eyes are on you. You can't kind of just, like, play the back and play bass.
Yep.
Yeah. You know, it's like you give it your all. You go super hard.
Yeah. And I won't complain. It's cool. I mean, like, I it's a funny thing. I'm often miserable in the spotlight, but I'm usually like, no, over here. You know, it's like, no, don't look at me. Look at me.
Like, this is my best side.
Yeah. I'm definitely a don't look at me, look at me type of person. And I have to get in a zone. And sometimes you drink too much. And sometimes, like, we don't have any really terrible, terrible habits. But like, oh yeah, how many times I've been like, I know what cocaine's for, you know. It's like,
yeah,
like, this is why people do cocaine, because they got to go do that.
You can flip the switch.
Yeah, you can flip it. But I don't do that. But I do, you know, I'll have a few glasses of wine. Sometimes I won't. But those shows are always, like, really, honestly, the shows where I won't have any, I was like, oh, those are all. If I don't drink anything, then I'm too inside my head. I think one or two glasses of wine is probably the best.
Yeah. When I was talking to Aaron, he said something at some point about, he's like, yeah, sometimes I think, like, I can't believe I'm 46 and I'm still in a band. Uh-huh. That's so embarrassing.
Yeah.
Do you have any similar feelings like that?
Yeah. No, we always do. I mean, like, we always listen, we play songs, we're like, does this sound like we're all trying to, like, wear skinny jeans? You know, it's like, and even though many of us still wear skinny jeans, but there is that, the whole pandering thing is like, we just can't do it. You know, like, we cannot, like, I can only write a certain way. And I mean, to answer your question is like, yeah, we're often like feeling like we don't want to seem like we're faking it, or if being on stage, singing a song that you don't really kind of believe or you know, doesn't feel good. So I think if we started making songs that we felt were like, ah, well, we're kind of just putting out records to service to service something, a fan base or whatever.
Right.
Like, it definitely wouldn't be enough. So obviously we're always asking, it's like, are these songs worth putting out? Is it, I know that, like, it's time for another record, or it's time for another tour, you know, according to the healthy economy of a functioning band and all that kind of stuff, you know. But that has never been the thing that's ever gotten us anywhere in terms of motivating us to make songs. And it's just the songs. It's like, if a song, we like it and we're like, ah, I like that's a good song, it's a beautiful song, that's why we're still a band.
Like, that's enough to...
Yeah. I won't be able to be the kind of performer like Mick Jagger is, you know? Because, well, I mean, and I think he's genuine, you know, mm-hmm. through and through. He is the, you know... But I think my showman thing is, I think has to age and evolve with me, meaning... I used to lose my mind. I used to smash stuff. I used to, like, you know, I would throw full bottles of wine 30 feet in the air, you know, in above the band, above me, in in controlled ways, where I would, like, let it smash to pieces, like, right around me, you know, and going out into the crowd
you go deep, I'll go deep out into the crowd. Yeah.
And I do love that. I might still do that, but if I feel like I'm doing that because of it's part of the show, I want to kill myself, you know. It's like,
or because it's expected, or it's your shtick or something. Yeah.
And all that stuff kind of becomes a shtick. And I think some of the self-disgust was like, I was disgusted with my own shtick, you know, like writing about myself, or like the idea of like doing that show and going out into the crowd when I was like, that is not the person I am right now. I can't go sing these songs and go into a crowd and entertain people. I can't watch TV, you know, I can barely, I'm nonverbal. I can't be an entertainer, you know? So like some show I have to sort of just embrace wherever I am, you know. And so that's not always a great show. I don't know, maybe it is. I like watching uncomfortable performers do nothing, you know. I find that riveting. But there is a little bit of that, of like, if it feels like we're going through the motions and trying to, you know, put on the show, if it feels like, you know, Phantom of the Opera, you know, after a while, it's a bummer.
I know that female artists have to deal with this a lot, but when you've gone out into the crowd like that, has anything sketchy ever happened to you? Like,
yeah, and it gets weird, and like it gets weird out there. That's why I'm like, I don't know if I like doing this anymore. It's almost all love, and people just like, that's the other thing. It's like, it's people just crush together and sing, you're singing their hearts out, and it's people having an incredible moment, and I am too. But then sometimes, but it gets scary, you know. It gets scary when just like that many bodies and the crush of people. So that, and then obviously there's a lot of people that just want to hang on you and just like want to spend the whole time with you, and like, I was like, you know what, this is, I'm doing this kind of for me and for like lots of people. It's not just for you to hang on me and like, you know, follow me. I don't like when people like follow me the whole time and try to like, you know, and people often try to pick me up because And I never let that. I don't. Crowd surfing is not. I hate it. It's
because they can drop you. You can just fall into a
it's
hole.
It's not that. It just looks so stupid to me. <It's> just, when you're up there trying to sing and you're being carried. I mean, I know. I mean, I've done it a bunch of times. It is like it's a bucket list. You got to do it. You know, you feel like such an idiot. I don't know. I mean, certain bands. If I were Blink-182 or whatever, yeah, hell yeah. But not. I can't. It just doesn't feel right. But anyway, so like all that kind of stuff is like, you just have to constantly try to stay yourself. And that changes. That's the thing. It changes. If you're trying to stay true to who you were when you were, you know, 30 or 25 or 19 or whatever, you're kind of going to look kind of silly, you know. Then again, will I even know, you know, that I look silly?
I know, right.
Probably not. I mean.
Well, your daughter will tell you.
I'm praying she does. So far she's been pretty kind. She's like, I mean, she has seen some videos that we've attempted to make some videos, and she's like, uh-uh. She's like, you,
really?
Yeah, the thing like that. She says, she's like, you look like you're trying to be all that, you know. It's like,
yeah.
And I'm like, she's like, it ruins
it's
this.
A fair criticism.
Yeah, it ruins. She's like, it kind of ruins the song for me. I was like, oh, got to kill that video, you know.
Hey,
I know, it's good. Thank God for her.
How do you feel about the Sad Dad Music label? How does that sit with you?
I don't care. I mean, it's appropriate. I cannot. I mean, like, yeah, it definitely, like, it's, I totally understand it. And I think I embrace it.
Yeah,
it feels fine. I mean, it's not how I would define myself, you know, entirely. But yeah, that's a little part of me. That's a little part of everybody, I think, or something. I think the funny thing is like my daughter, I think, like, loves the Sad Dads. Like, we sell hoodies that say Sad Dads on it. And it's like her, you know, she's into it. She loves, like it's cool, you know. And for some reason, I think it's cool to be a Sad Dad. But I also can see why other artists that get the sad, and mostly it's young women, get the sort of the, you know, the sad label, and how that can be infuriating. And so, but for me, I'm like, I've earned it. Yeah. I cannot say that does not fit.
Well, I read that Pitchfork wrote the National aren't dad rock as much as their men's magazine rock.
Oh, that's
kind of more sleek.
No, that one's hurtful.
That's hurtful. I feel like that's sleek. That's like GQ rock.
I think of like Maxim whenever you say men's magazines. I think of like Details I don't think even GQ is it. I guess, yeah, GQ rock. I don't think we're GQ rock either. That'd be cool. I wish we were GQ rock. I am doing an interview with GQ, I think, soon. So,
have you done many interviews yet for this album?
No, not that many. I'm doing a lot less than usual. A lot of it is because it's like, the stuff on this record is a little bit harder to talk about, I think, maybe. And I kind of was like, it's kind of all there on the record, you know? So,
yeah.
So like getting into it a little bit, digging further into it feels a little icky, but I know that's part of it, and I'm happy to do it. And so, but this has been delightful, though, hasn't it?
Yeah. I appreciate so much you taking the time and being so thoughtful, and best wishes with the album. It's awesome.
Thank you.
And sounds like you have another album already ready.
Maybe. We always say that, but like not unless it's got to be great. But so if it's not, it might take some time. But thanks for doing this. This seems cool.
Thanks to Matt Berninger for breaking down his songwriting process with Leah. You can hear all of our favorite National songs on a playlist at brokenrecordpodcast.com. You can follow us on Twitter at Broken Record. Broken Record is produced with help from Leah Rose, Jason Gambrell, Ben Tolliday, and Eric Sandler. Our editor is Sophie Crane. Broken Record is a production of Pushkin Industries. And if you like the show, please remember to share, rate, and review us on your podcast app. Our theme music's by Kenny Beats. I'm Justin Richman. Consider subscribing to Pushkin Plus. Pushkin Plus is a podcast subscription that offers bonus content and uninterrupted ad-free listening for $4.99 a month. Look for Pushkin Plus on Apple Podcast subscriptions. And if you like the show, please remember to share, rate, and review us on your podcast app. Our theme music's by Kenny Beats. I'm Justin Richmond.
Did you know some travel credit cards offer 10 times points on your spending? Don't miss out on big rewards for your next trip. NerdWallet lets you compare smart travel credit cards side by side, curated by an expert team of finance nerds. What could future you do with better travel rewards? A free flight? A room upgrade? Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. Reminder, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. NerdWallet, finance smarter.
It all started with two federal agents who heard a rumor.
She mentions, well, there is this alleged murder to have taken place.
There was just one problem. They had no clue who the victim was.
We have to do our job, and we have to find out, who did they kill?
It had been 15 years since this alleged murder. Was it still possible to unearth the truth?
I used to watch the Unsolved Mystery shows, and I often thought about calling because I was like, this is not right. How can a person get killed and no one knows anything?
I'm Jake Halpern, and this is Deep Cover, The Nameless Man. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. And if you want to hear the entire season right now, ad-free, subscribe to Pushkin Plus on our Apple Podcast show page or on pushkin.fm/plus.